I think there's a fact that 70% of all people who buy from garden centres will feed the birds.
Welcome to the Underground Podcast. I'm Kate, the gardener guru, horticultural consultant, and writer and presenter on all things gardening.
And I'm Phil, co-founder of Right O'Bara, a creative marketing agency for the home and garden sectors. Join us in conversation with those people shaping the UK's garden care industry.
So without further ado,
let's get down and dirty. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Phil.
And should I say season's greetings?
Oh, absolutely. And I want a big ho, ho, ho as well.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yes, so this is our last episode before we take a little break over Christmas. And we have got something quite special coming up, though, over the Christmas break. So if somebody wants to really impress their loved ones with a special, special gift, what can they listen to, Phil?
Well, I mean, without giving too much away, it really is going to make your holiday season. It is the Underground's peat-free special.
Woohoo! Now, I'm really pleased about this, Phil, because recently Hort Week brought out their kind of three or four episodes on the peat-free debate.
Four episodes.
And both of us, I have to admit, found it quite depressing listening.
I mean, it was oppressive.
It was very oppressive. And I totally get that it's very difficult for a lot of people in the industry. I absolutely do. But here at the Underground, we are very pro the peat-free transition. We know a lot of people are spending a lot of money on all kinds of new machinery, new storage facilities, just have had to change the way they work. And I just think it's just a no-brainer that we have to leave the peatlands alone. So we're going to be taking a more positive look at peat-free, talking to lots of amazing people.
No, we are. We're going to be talking to the scientists who've been developing the formulations. We're going to be talking to the people who are coming up with the different ingredients for these things, and also how consumers are actually using products. And we're going to be talking about some of the successes. Okay. We want to highlight some of the successes that are out there and talk about, the future, really, because it is the future.
The future is going to be peat-free, so we just can't keep going back. And if we as an industry are saying peat-free is terrible, it's useless, it's rubbish, what hope is there for the home gardener to take it on board and get growing? So our mission, I think, really is, isn't it, to give people as many kind of help and hints as they can to get the most out of peat-free, and also talk about why it's so important to get there.
Completely. And on that positive note, why don't we talk about what we're going to be discussing this week?
Well, yeah, something completely different, isn't it? We're talking to, do you want to explain?
We are going to be talking to Tony Clare, who is the commercial director from Henry Bell. And Henry Bell are a bird food manufacturer.
A lot of people talk about how gardening makes them feel good, getting outside. Not everybody can garden. Not everybody has a big enough garden. But it is that very kind of action of feeding birds and then sitting back and watching them.
Absolutely.
And, that's just one thing I absolutely love. And I think people might think, well, why do I want to listen to a podcast about bird food manufacture? Well, without birds in our garden, they would be a very much more kind of emptier place. Mm. So I really hope people do listen and learn. And as you said, it's about businesses, and you love a business, don't you, Phil?
I certainly do. I think there's going to be a great commercial benefit for garden centres and businesses who actually do implement a bird feeding section within their business. So it'll be really interesting to speak to Tony and find out just what that impact is on a garden centre's turnover and, what they're taking. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm also going to ask you for some top tips on how to get the best out of getting birds into your garden. So looking forward to this.
Maybe the best place to start is whether you could just share a little brief history of Henry Bell and its evolution into the wild bird care industry.
Of course. I'd say it's a brief evolution. We're celebrating our 200th anniversary this year.
Right.
Wow.
We've been around for quite a while. It's been the owner of the company has been in his family for now for the fourth generation, so the best part of half of that. There's quite a long history behind the business. As a brand, we are quite new. We launched just over 5 years ago at Glee in 2019.
Oh, right. Okay.
So we're one of the newcomers to the kind of the industry in terms of brand, but in terms of business and what we do and how we operate, we've been around for a long time. So traditionally, we're known as kind of an OEM manufacturer. So we manufacture for other brands.
Okay.
In the industry. So for those of you who've got some memories going back, people like Gardman or Chapelwood or those historical would come to us and say, can you manufacture and make product on our behalf and then put it in their bags and distribute it out from there? And then 6 years ago, kind of following a few changes within the industry, Tom came to me and said, I would like to talk and have a conversation about creating my own brand. So that was 6 years ago, and now we fast forward and here we are today.
Yeah, brilliant.
Just taken 200 years to get there, but you've got there now.
There's never a rush in Birkin.
So Tony, what made you want to come and work for a bird food company?
I get this quite a lot, actually. And it's when you kind of talk to people and you meet socially and they say, what do you do? And you say, oh, you feed the birds. And you go, oh, really? I say, yeah, I know. So I used to work for Gardman. Going back, I came into the industry just over 10 years ago, which probably still makes me a newbie for most people. But
yeah,
I came into the gardening industry 10 years ago, and I was procurement director and supply chain director at Gardman. And then when Gardman had the catastrophic fire and things went kind of wrong at the end, I kind of had some decisions to make. And it was at that time that Tom approached me. And historically, Tom would have been my supplier. So I used to buy from Henry Bell. It was kind of a novel approach at the time. It was interesting for somebody to come and say, we'd like to build a brand, but we have no idea how to do it. We'd like your help. Would you come on board?
Yeah.
Right. That's gosh. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So we met on a Friday evening in Stamford and had a drink and wished I had more than one or three.
So what distinguishes Henry Bell from all the other brands in the market? Why did they decide it was a good idea to go for it?
I think bird care within gardening, in my view, is one of those areas that hadn't really changed or developed for quite a period of time.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And if you look at trends within gardening and garden centres and the way people shop and what they're shopping for, I think over the last 20 years, you've seen a massive move. And I always use furniture as a good example. You know, what people were buying furniture-wise 25 years ago in terms of garden benches is definitely not what people are buying today.
Absolutely, yeah.
But bird perhaps hadn't been as quick to move with the times.
Mm-hmm.
Brands had been around for a while, but it was still seen as almost kind of a secondary product category because it sells really well at Christmas or it sells when it's cold and it keeps us going when garden centers got less footfall. So it was kind of almost like it was a secondary consideration. And we wanted and have striven to be different, more contemporary. We came at it with a different younger target market and target audience at the time, a younger female market. And we wanted to freshen up the category. Now, that's not me criticizing other brands within the area that we compete with.
No.
I admire them a lot, and a lot of them have great qualities. But we felt there was a sufficient gap for us to try and exploit by bringing something new and different. Now, we had the manufacturing history and the manufacturing facility behind it because we have the largest manufacturing facility within the UK here in Grantham, where I sit at the moment.
Okay.
So because we'd been making for everybody and because we had the expertise in manufacturing and we knew what we were doing product-wise in terms of bags within, that wasn't so difficult. And if we could take that and look to be niche and exploit that niche and opportunity within the market, we felt there was a chance to kind of to impact within. So now when you see the range that we have, I would describe it as being younger. I would describe it as being more contemporary. I would describe it as being cleaner. We try and make ourselves very easy to shop for our customers to navigate. I have one of these pet things that if I'm standing 20 yards away from a shelf, I want to know that I'm walking in the direction of what I'm going to buy. I have to get there and then work out what's in the bag in front of me. So everything is clear. Everything says what it is. We color code things just to make it easier. And we spend a lot of time with our customers, garden centers, working to deliver that. And I guess we'll come on to talk about some of the trends and some of the ideas we've got. But in principle of where we started, that was what we wanted to be.
So you talked about how you approach your branding. You kind of got this younger feeling. But what about what actually goes inside to the packaging? How do you kind of ensure your quality and sustainability match up to what you're selling?
Well, I think there are two steps to that. So let me first start with the packaging. At launch, we launched the first range that was 100% recyclable bags across our products. Okay. Everything we sell comes in a curbside collection. So it's not take to a supermarket. It's not, to recycle. Everything is curbside. And now we had to invest to do that. There is a cost, obviously, attached.
Yeah.
But that was the premise that we wanted to come from. It was one of the key words that comes up on the chart when you organize these things. The 10 things you want to be as sustainable, you'd be unsurprised to know, was within number two or number three on the kind of the list to do. Actually, number one was quality. And I'm very lucky in a way in that my managing director, who's been in the business now and running this business for about 25 years, is probably just about the world's expert of what goes into a bag to make a really good feed.
Fantastic.
Right. Okay.
And he is passionate that the product that we bring to market is the best that we can make it. So we concentrate on the variety of seeds, the content of seeds that go in. We try and minimize the filler, if that makes sense, of cut down on the wastage. So we try and stand by the fact that we have the highest quality product within the market in a fully recyclable bag. So both of those elements are entirely key about what we stand for. I think as a result of that, a lot of the customers from garden centers who now have bought into the brand and bought into what we do, we tend to upsell them into higher quality products. So, our entry product is not, we have it, but it's not really a product that we're passionate about selling. I'd much rather put people into a higher level really kind of post COVID, when all of a sudden more people were feeding the birds than ever before, because you could do play golf, go fishing, or go to a garden center. So a lot more people started feeding the birds than they ever done. And then kind of over the last 4 or 5 years since that time, you find there's a lot more educated customer base out there. So they will spend more money to buy into a better quality product.
But as you said, it's not easy. And we found that's very comparable with kind of a lot of the peat-free manufacturers around, that, it is a more expensive product and you've got to get that selling just right. But the quality's got to be there. But then hopefully people will come back because they know, your quality's good. So they're going to buy you again.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think there is a decision for the customers, for the consumers at the consumer end who are buying. They have to know what they're buying and buy into the right product and keep coming back. And there is a responsibility for the garden centers within that, as well as supplying consumers and allowing them to make an informed purchase. Within this industry, we focus on encouraging customers and consumers into their gardens. We ask them to, spend money and time and growing things and nurturing things, as well as making things look and feeding the birds on top is a very, very simple step to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's a fact that 70% of all people who buy from garden centers will feed the birds.
Right. That's a good stat.
That is a really good stat, isn't it? So I'm a sustainable gardener. That's how I like to garden. So would you say that by encouraging birds into your garden, by feeding them, that you are also having other benefits, such as controlling kind of pest problems that you might have in your garden?
Yes. I think without meaning to sound stupid, the more birds you have, the more bugs and grubs and everything else you're going to be eating. If you're anything like me, I had slugs all over the place early on this year.
Don't.
The rain came down, so my lovely vegetable patch got decimated.
Oh, bless. So would you say there are, I mean, most of us think that winter is the time you need to feed birds. Is that necessarily true? Are there other specific times of the year when you should be feeding your birds?
So I would encourage people to feed all year round, and that's nothing to do with the commercial success of the business, so I hasten to add. It actually gets birds accustomed to in a routine of where they feed from. Right. So they tend to go back to the same source quite frequently. Yeah. They'll have a route that they fly around, not just in your garden, but in neighbours and various hedgerows go through. So, so if you're not feeding the whole year round, they'll tend to skip and move on or gap, and they have to then go learn and then go to find. Right. Now, obviously, you know, the colder it gets and the less berries there are on the trees, the more they will rely upon us helping them out. So winter is kind of seen as the key time to feed the birds. And, you know, we had the first snow where I live last week. And certainly I saw a lot more birds coming to feed over the weekend than I had done in a while. But I say it is important to keep feeding the birds all year round. In terms of for the industry and industry sales numbers, actually the busiest time for us as a bird care manufacturer is in May.
Okay. Is that because people are getting out more and seeing more kind of younger birds and just more aware of the birds in their garden?
I think it's a combination of two things. I think it's yes, because you're getting baby birds coming in, so you're seeing more fledglings and people are talking about it more. But actually, bird care sales, again, coming back to the link between us and people who garden, the more people who are going into garden centres, you're naturally going to get the uplift as well. So one is customer footfall and the other one is the time of year that goes through.
Okay. And do your products have different types of feed? So more different feed for the winter, different feed for spring. So you're encouraging them to feed all year, but does the type of food you would advise change?
I would advise to be consistent in what you feed and what you put out. But yes, there are benefits of individual products through the year. So we do a product called a calci worm, which is a variation on a mealworm. Those are common all year round, but actually calci worm in its name has a higher concentrate of calcium within it. So very good for hardening eggshells and for bone development in baby birds. So, you know, if you're looking to feed and you've got baby birds in a little nest box in March and April, there's a really good product to be putting out there.
Yeah, definitely.
In the winter, I would be looking at a suet or a high-energy fat ball or fat product. Gives the bird an instant boost. It helps build their body weight and keep them going. And in the cold weather, we all sit there and look at our robins shivering in the bushes. But
I know.
Sure, would appreciate a very nice fat ball to have.
Well, that's my excuse for eating lots of chocolate and fatty foods in the winter.
So we launched 12 months ago a range called Insect Oil. Now that's a new version of a fat product. Traditionally a fat ball is made from suet as a byproduct from a cow. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right.
This product is the byproduct from calci worm. Now, the big advantage of that is, well, a number of reasons really, but the environmental impact of taking a fat ball from a cow and having to grow the cow and feed the cow and the amount of land it needs, water and food and all of that versus a mealworm is quite remarkable.
Massive, yeah.
Yeah, so you, the studies show that you use 98% less greenhouse emissions by making a fat ball from calci worm than you do from a cow.
I like that.
Now, on top of the environmental benefit of the product is the fact that actually traditionally birds, unsurprised to know, are used to eating insects.
Eating worms.
Yeah. So it turns out it's actually better for them as well.
Of course. So calciworm, is that like a product name, or is that the actual name of the insect itself?
So the insect itself is called black soldier larva. So it's a type of mealworm. It's a calciworm.
I met them a couple of weeks ago. They are big thing in sustainable gardening. So they're the new big thing in plant food as well. So interesting. Yeah, I went to a fly farm a couple of weeks ago up in Hertfordshire. So yeah, smells lovely.
Do you know what? I've not been to one domestically. I have, however, been to many in China, and the smell is something really, really will never get out of your system. But quite funny. But we launched the product 12 months ago. Success has been, the uptake has been really, really good, actually. Mm-hmm. So we position it as kind of, again, challenging the boundary and being a category leader. Where can we innovate, and where can we take the next development to?
Tony, in the spirit of there's no such thing as a stupid question, how do if you're new to feeding a bird, so you put a bird feeder in the bottom of your garden.
Are we speaking from personal position here?
No. We actually feed the birds in our garden. But if you're new to feeding the birds in your garden, you put a bird feeder out. Yeah. How do they know that it's there? Do they just fly past and they spot it? I mean,
How do they know? Well, you normally, within these things, it takes about 7 days for a bird. So if you hang a bird feeder up for the first time, don't expect that much interaction for the first 3 or 4 days. Wait for the seventh. They do have a sense of smell.
Okay.
They don't particularly have a sense of taste.
Right.
But they do have a sense of smell, so they will be able to smell the food to come and find it. But give yourself 7 days for the birds to find the food source. Okay. If it's not working within 7 days, then move it. But I would keep it. One of the things that people do is they like to put it on their own so that they can put the feeder somewhere so that they can see the feeder. So often they hang it in the middle of nowhere. Actually, what you need to do is hang it by a tree or branches so that the birds can find a safe place to hover or perch, mm-hmm. so they get the sense of security that they can feed from the feeder without danger.
Right. And do they then, so once they found it, do they then tell their friends about it?
Yeah, they get together and have a coffee. Say, here you go, glass of cocoa, and there you go that way. They tend to follow it around. You'll get one where one will be, the others will follow. Although it will help to use different types of feed to attract different birds.
Right.
All right. So if you have, as an example, chaffinches or finches in your garden, you should be looking mm-hmm. to put Niger feed out, because that's something that they absolutely love. Nut hatches, obviously peanuts, and then you can get then into more generic. But there are specific foods that will attract different types of birds, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Okay.
And do you do a breakdown of, do you do single kind of single feeds for single bird types?
On every single bag of product that we do, we have images of the birds that will feed from that product, and we provide point of sale to stores as well. It provides a complete food list on the breakdown, and then pictures of birds along the top, and you can match it out as to what you want.
Right, great. Well, that's handy. Yeah.
So earlier you mentioned about climate change. Are you seeing climate change having an impact on the business?
I think I'm seeing sustainability is becoming key, not just for us, but within the industry. It's certainly what people are talking about. So everybody is more environmentally aware than we ever have been. And I think that that's only growing. The impact upon birds, I think we've spoken about, massive. It's massive. It's only going to get worse. So the more we can start at the moment, the better. As well as feeding the birds and responsibility to feeding the birds, we have a corporate responsibility to do the right thing for the planet and the right thing for the people. And we strive and endeavor to do that at all times.
Right.
Okay.
So when you're feeding birds in the garden, so how does that actually contribute to local biodiversity and ecosystem health?
It helps with the different types of food that you will put and the variety of foods that are available and the number of sources that those birds can go to. So yes, it's right. going to help. It's going to help keep numbers up, and it's going to help keep Particularly in spring, it's going to help. It's going to make it easier for the baby birds to get through. What you want is the baby birds to get through spring and into summer so that they can then get into winter. You want to give them the best start you possibly can.
Absolutely.
So having multiple foods available in as many sources as possible is the best thing that we can do.
So we've touched on this earlier about, as well as the environmental impact on feeding birds, you kind of briefly mentioned the personal benefit. I mean, for me, feeding birds, I've absolutely noticed it because I moved to the coast a year ago and I have seagulls and I can't feed my birds anymore. I know it sounds silly, but I miss watching from a window or just sitting in my garden watching blackbirds were always my favorite, but I really, really miss that. And I've always found that is a mental health benefit. Would you kind of, is that something you push as part of your business?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is an undoubted benefit for getting out and about in the garden and being part of one with nature. You know, how quantifiable that is, I don't know. But there is absolutely a benefit in doing that.
Oh, there's lots of quantifiable research out there. So
there you go.
There's a load.
There you go. So, there is a huge benefit to doing that. In terms of your specific one, if you've got lots of seagulls in your garden, keeping the birds away without trying to flog one of my own products too overtly. We introduced a squirrel defense feeder at Glee this year, which Brother's taken. It's been 2 years in design. It has a weight control system on the perches so that if a heavy bird, like a pigeon or a seagull or a dove, were to land on it, the food source is closed so they can't get to it.
That'd be really interesting. Yeah. And you say it works?
I believe so. I also live by the coast and I've managed to keep the seagulls.
Do you? Oh, brilliant. I am going to have a go because seagulls are great. They're interesting to watch. But I miss the blue tits. I miss the little guys. I really, really do. And actually I've had a bigger kind of infestation of smaller pests this year. I really have, you know, green fly, aphids, all that kind of thing. So I really do think it makes a difference. But yeah, anyway, that's enough about me and my mental health. So again, we've talked about garden centres. So what other advantages do garden centres gain by dedicating sectors to bird feeding products, would you say?
Garden centres that have a proper range of bird care. I think, you know, come back to the 70% of people that are buying gardens then buying bird. Right. So that's
amazing.
You know, the more they have, the better it's going to be. The more products you have then available and the more choice you're giving consumers, the better it can be as well. And it's important, I think, to merchandise and position the product in the right way. Mm-hmm. So we work closely with a lot of our partners in how our product is displayed. So we utilize what we call a vertical merchandising. So we do a bay of food. And then we do a bay of hardware, and the hardware corresponds with the food to make sure the connectivity between the two is there. But we also encourage all of our centres that we work with to use secondary spacing and wooden display units so that you're picking up ad hoc purchases and boosting basket spend and getting all of those commercial advantages in there as well.
So if a garden centre is dedicated space to their bird feeding section within the store, what sort of things can the garden centre do to effectively educate their customers about the importance of feeding the birds?
Work with us and we'll help you do it. I'm sure everybody says that. Look, we spend a lot of time working with, we call our garden centre partners here, to look at what is the best way to display product, what is the best way to show product, what is the best point of sale that we can bring that enables the area to get shopped to its best of its ability, but also to make sure that customers are buying the right product. So if I use a new initiative that we introduced at Glee this year, we've designed something called Brand Blocks. It's a very simple bit of point of sale that's roughly the size of a bag of birdseed that attaches on the back wall unit. But it enables us to put a key message to the consumer about what they should be doing. So one of the ones we talk about is, you know, again, buy, if you're buying a whole peanut, please use a peanut feeder. What is the difference between calcium worm and a mealworm? You know, calcium worm, higher calcium content, all those kind of things. So we're working with customers to try and educate the whole way through the process. Mm-hmm. And it's important, I think, that as a manufacturer, we have a responsibility to do that. It cannot just be upon garden centres to do that sort of thing. You know, we have a massive part to play. And we pride ourselves on being a bird specialist. We don't do anything else.
Right. Okay.
And if we're going to make that statement, then we need to be able to work with our partners to actually prove that and justify that. So it's a constant ongoing project within the team here. Is the how do we keep innovating? How do we keep pushing, but not just on product, on education and information as well.
So we talked about trends and how you're kind of changing your packaging and your look. Are there anything specific, particular trends that you've observed in customer interest regarding your kind of the bird feeding supplies? Or are you kind of the vanguard of this new kind of look, would you say?
Oh, I think we learn the whole time. And I think as a business, we have a team, and I demand it of my team to be learning. And if we don't learn and we're not moving on, then it's never a good thing. Absolutely. Somebody once told me, if you did what you did last year, then all you're ever going to do is do the same again next year. And that's
I like that. You're giving us a few good quotes here today.
Yeah. So look, in terms of things that we've picked up on at the moment, I think there are probably two key learnings coming out of the last year we're working on. So we are introducing a lot of multi-feed feeders. So instead of having one type of food per feeder, we're actually looking to explore two or three different types within. Now, that enables you to do all those things we just talked about in terms of attracting different birds and everything else, but it means that you're buying into one and keeping an eye on it. Now, actually, our best-selling feeder within the UK, both in terms of volume and turnover in the last 12 months, is our 3-in-1 feeder, which is our most expensive one.
Right.
So that has seed, fat ball, and sunflower hearts. So you have beautifully tracking it through. So that's the biggest one. So we have worked on developing that range. So we've expanded the 3-in-1, and we're also introducing 2-in-1 feeders as well. So customers are buying into, I think, more expensive product, but more expensive product when they've got different feed types on top. And then the second trend, which I think we spoke about earlier, is that people are really looking to buy a quality seed mix that has the highest variety. And when I talk to a lot of our centres that we work with, that's one of the big areas of feedback, is actually an entry price point is all well and good, but that's not what customers are looking for, and that's not really what they want to sell. And in the last 12 months, our volume on our kind of two top end lines is somewhere in the region of about 18 to 20% up year on year.
Right.
So you're really seeing that education piece coming at the back of COVID. Mm-hmm. More numbers came in. Everybody bought hardware. Hardware sales dropped for a bit. But then as the kind of understanding of what they need to feed goes, what they buy starts to improve, and then they're coming back. Now we're going around in full circle again, and it's right, okay, let's get new hardware, let's make it look better, but let's get multi-feed varieties coming in.
So Henry Bell's been around a long, long time. So how do you approach innovation in product development? How do you stay ahead in the bird care industry? Do you have your own R&D department? Is it quite a big company?
We're a fair-sized company. I wouldn't say we're large enough to have an R&D company. Look, we're kind of on site. We're probably about 80 people in all. Includes most of that's manufacturing. We have quite a big operations team here. One of the challenges that we have as a business is, you know, we've set ourselves a target of maintaining 98 plus availability on all lines, and we have done since the first day that we launched. And actually, we maintained that through COVID.
That's good.
So we're always trying to keep that going. In terms of new ideas and innovation, we work really closely with a number of key garden partners, garden centres within the industry. Right. We have quarterly meetings where we all get together and we look at trends, new product ideas, new product initiatives, where we could be going. Again, we are a bird specialist. We want to be seen to be the category leader. We want to be seen to be, you know, pushing the boat. Now, people might think that's not quite so easy when it comes to feeding the birds. And yeah, hardware is probably slightly different. But yeah. If you can look at a number of different ways of how can we help our centres to sell more? Mm-hmm. How can we help our customers to buy the right product and feed more? Mm-hmm. And what can we do as a company to help facilitate all of that with going? And that's a constant question that we continue to ask ourselves. We are working on our new product development initiatives for next season. We started about 6-8 weeks ago.
Right.
And they tend to take about 10 months to come to fruition.
Indeed.
And at some point in the next few weeks, I'll be disappearing on a plane to China when it's really freezing cold and it's not the time of year that you want to go. But
that's really the time
to do it when you're working in Birkin.
So quite clearly that new product development's top secret. So can you tell us about that?
No. No. In terms of where we're looking at a couple of food lines for next year. I don't want to give too much away, but they're going to be within what we call our ready-to-feed category.
Right.
So this is kind of the lower end of the feed, but where you're looking to increase basket spend and you're probably looking to get first-time consumers into the market.
Okay.
People tend to forget, actually, one of the key roles that garden centres have within this industry is to keep new people coming in.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, that's the beauty of a pre-filled feeder is somebody can take a product that's under £5, take it off the shelf, buy it, walk out and feed the birds without having to do anything.
Not
many other retailers have that opportunity. So we are looking at that. And then we have a number of other hardware initiatives as well. I can't give too much away, but I think I did mention earlier that birds have a sense of smell.
Yes.
There might be something along those lines coming to help you attract more birds into your garden.
Well, you heard it here first.
Heard it here first, folks. That's interesting. Because one of the tips that I'm always being told is if you put chili powder on your bird food, that'll keep the squirrels away because they do have a sense of taste, whereas birds don't. Is that true?
That is true. I'm not sure I use chili powder. I might use chili oil, but yes, they have a sense of taste. Be careful what you feed. I mean, I grow chilies. Right. So I would recommend a kind of a jalapeno style SCOVID rating for getting rid of them rather than a kind of a ghost chili because you then might really not have any squirrels left. But yes, it's very true that spice does keep squirrels away.
So leading on from that then, do you have another or what's the most unusual or creative bird feeding tip you've ever come across?
Well, you actually stole my thunder there.
I'm so sorry.
I was going to do that one. No, so this is a true story, and my parents, bless them, they're kind of. I don't think my mum will ever to listen to this, so I'm safe to say they're kind of in their mid-70s, so I can probably get away with this. So they have lots of squirrels in their garden,
right?
And they are forever, you know, phoning me and asking me for new ideas because they've got squirrels. So I gave them a squirrel-proof feeder as a Christmas present a couple of years ago, and I had the phone call within 3 days to say, it's great, but I've got a squirrel around a squirrel-proof feeder. So then they changed where they were hanging it from, so he decided to change the location on the tree.
Right.
And then he got some great initiative and decided that he was going to wrap barbed wire around the top of the feeder and the branch to stop the squirrel going along to get to the food. And then he phoned me up 2 days later to say that he'd given up because the squirrel had just decided to eat through the branch and chewed the branch off and it had fallen on the ground and he was now eating the food. Wow. At which point I said, have you heard of chili oil? And he did try the chili oil trick and he now has bird feeders in his garden where only the birds will feed from. And this year I bought I hope he doesn't listen to this until January, but I have bought him a squirrel feeder to go down the other end of the garden so he can keep it down that end.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. So chili does work, folks. You've heard it here. It absolutely does. Great. Wonderful. And one thing I'm just going to add, if you don't mind, is just to say about, as well as feeding the birds, it's also really, really important to put water out there as well when you're feeding birds, clean, fresh water.
Yeah. And if you wish to use a Henry Bell water drinker, I'd love you forever.
But there we go.
It's very true. And it's very clear. It's one of the things in every bay of hardware we do, you will always find water drinkers.
Ah, how have I missed that? Okay. That's really interesting.
And we didn't arrange that in advance between us. That was actually.
No, we didn't.
Well, I think that's brilliant. I think that just about wraps things up, Tony. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today. It's been fascinating finding out about Henry Bell and your history, very long history of the company. And
I'm not that old, by the way. I've only been here 6 years. Let's get there as well. No, look, thank you for taking the opportunity to talk to me, and thanks for lining this up. And I hope some people join in and listen.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at wrightobarra.com.